Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation. Michael is off tonight. I will be filling in for him. Michael, my buddy, I just want to take the time now, my friend, to thank you for the wonderful honor and opportunity of sitting in for you tonight. And I got to tell you, Michael, I am so looking forward to your blockbuster book. I'm sure it's going to be another huge bestseller. Just in time to maybe save this republic from the impending disaster of an Obama second term, trickle-down tyranny. It will be out in early April. In fact, it should be out on April 3rd. I cannot tell you how much I'm looking forward to it, my friend. When I get the advance copy, I will devour it. I will read it. And hopefully I'll write a review for it in the Washington Times. And I wish you nothing but the best of luck. For those of you out there, go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, for the absolute latest must-read stories on the issues of the day. In particular, I want to draw your attention to a couple of very, very important stories. On the left-hand side of michaelsavage.com, there is a story about Iran now sending its warships into the Mediterranean. They are moving into the Suez Canal. The Iranians are now practicing war games. And as this is going on, you have another story on michaelsavage.com, which you will not find in the mainstream left-wing media. And that is that the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, now poised to fully take over that country, is calling for the dream of a global caliphate. A world Muslim empire. And here, in an unbelievable story on michaelsavage.com, right there on the right-hand corner, near the top, Harvard conference calls for the end of the Jewish state. There is now an upcoming conference at Harvard University. The cream of the Ivy League, where supposedly our best and brightest go to and come from. There is now a conference calling for the elimination of Israel and the elimination of the Jewish state. Now, many of you may say, Jeff, what do all these three things have in common? It is this, my friends. And this is what's been going on over the weekend, and it is now a gathering storm. Iran is on the warpath. Radical Islam is on the march. And liberals here in America, just like in the 1930s, are now willing to appease the fascists of the day. Over the weekend, in a stunning decision, the Iranian government, led by the Hitler of our time, Mahmoud, I want a jihad, Ahmadinejad, cut off Iran's supply of oil to the Europeans. Over the last 2 days, world oil prices have soared. Gas prices have skyrocketed because demand remains the same. But now, within 48 hours, literally the flick of a switch, the Iranians have taken 2 million barrels of oil off of the international market. You lower supply, demand remains steady, prices go up. In markets across America and cities across America, over 48 hours, gas has gone up 17 cents a gallon in most cities. It is now approaching $4 a gallon. In some states, it's already hit $4 a gallon. And members of the Savage Nation, we're in February. This is supposed to be the low time of gas consumption. We haven't hit our summer vacations yet. By this summer, gas prices are going to skyrocket to $5 a gallon, maybe $5.50 a gallon. That means it's going to come out of your pockets, Mr. and Mrs. America. It's coming out of you. You're going to have to pay more to fill up your tank. It's going to cost you a lot more to fly. It's going to cost you a lot more for your vacation. You're paying for Obama's incompetence. And so now, for the past 3.5 years, while this madman in Tehran has told the world openly and nakedly that he seeks to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, as he put it, that rotten, stinking Zionist entity is coming to an end. As he tells his followers day after day, in interview after interview, in article after article in the Iranian press, the way Hitler ranted and raved throughout the 1930s in Germany, how he, Ahmadinejad, has been called by Allah to bring upon the earth the Muslim Shia Christ, what they call the 12th Imam, the Mahdi, to bring about what he says is the end of days, the fulfillment of the prophecies in the Quran, where the world will be, as he put it, engulfed in a ball of fire. And what is needed to trigger this Armageddon, this bringing about of a global caliphate, of a world final Muslim empire? The destruction of the Jews. The destruction of the state of Israel. That's why he's embarked on a nuclear weapons program. He wants the bomb. Not for deterrence. Not to protect Iran. But to be used upon the Jews. And so, as this has been going on, as Netanyahu has been begging the American administration, begging Hillary Clinton, begging President Obama, please let me unleash the Israeli Air Force before it's too late. Israeli intelligence is now telling everybody and telling the American administration, Iran is now 3 to 6 months away from the bomb. By this spring, they may even hit the point of no return, meaning they have so much technology, so much of the nuclear scientific know-how dispersed in facilities underground all across the country. You won't be able to stop them from getting the bomb. And yet, my sources in the Israeli intelligence community have told me, privately, Obama has told Netanyahu no. Niet, as the Russians would say. No. Because he is telling Netanyahu to wait. Let me handle it. Let the Europeans handle it. Let the UN handle it. Now, my friends, while you're paying more in gas prices, while Obama has dithered against Iran, leading now to gas prices soaring and continuing to rise, you have to pay for it. What is the kind of man that we are facing? This man that Obama wants to engage in dialogue, this supposed man of rational sanity, here is Ahmadinejad, in his own words, at the United Nations, talking about September 11. Blois, roll the clip.
Identifying those responsible behind the September 11 attack, there were three viewpoints. First, that a very powerful and complex terrorist group carried out the attack. Second, that some segments within the U.S. government orchestrated the attack. The majority of the American people, as well as most nations and politicians around the world, agree with this view. All values, even that of the freedom of expression, which in Europe and the United States seem to matter so much and are so important, have been sacrificed at the altar of Zionism.
It's a world Jewish conspiracy. You see, there are two points of view. There's the minority point of view, the Zionist Jewish point of view, which is you had 19 terrorists who slammed airplanes into the World Trade Center and killed 3,000 Americans. But there's the majority point of view that most Americans believe in, most people around the world believe in. He's obviously saying most Muslims believe in, which is it was a conspiracy by the American government. They attacked themselves. They brought it upon themselves to supposedly impose an empire and to subjugate the Muslim peoples. This is the kind of madman you have in Tehran. Basically, we brought 9/11 upon ourselves with the full support of the American government. Okay? This is Hitler. This is the ravings of a Hitlerian madman. This is the kind of man we're dealing with. So what's Obama's response? Here is what Obama said in 2010 when he announced sanctions against Iran. Boys, roll clip one.
This day was not inevitable. We made clear from the beginning of my administration that the United States was prepared to pursue diplomatic solutions to address the concerns over Iranian nuclear programs. We offered the opportunity of a better relationship between Iran and the international community, one that reduced Iran's political isolation and increased its economic integration with the rest of the world. We offered the Iranian government the prospect of a better future for its people if it lives up to its international obligations.
What is this guy smoking? Are you serious? You're talking about economic integration with a man like that? My friends, members of the Savage Nation, let me give all of you an exclusive right here, right now. You want to know why Obama has told Israel not to attack Iran? You want to know why the Obama administration is asking you to pay higher gas prices throughout the spring and summer? Because what he's doing is this. He is waiting, desperately hoping that Tehran will not get the bomb. But should Tehran get close to the bomb, by the end of the summer, early fall, Obama, if he sees his poll numbers falling, if he sees gas prices soaring, if he sees another double dip recession coming, if he sees the American people are going to kick him out of office because they're tired of his incompetence, he will then launch airstrikes. He will bomb Iran to win re-election. It will be his October surprise because he knows the American people will rally around the president. They will rally around the flag. And so he knows that if he launches strikes just before the election, a month or 6 weeks out, his poll numbers will go up. He'll get a temporary boost. My friends, he is playing politics with the very future of the Jews, with the very future of the Israeli state, with the very future of world peace, with your very economic security. And so my question to you is this. Are you willing to pay $5 a gallon for Obama to launch a potential October surprise to get himself reelected? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on a Savage Nation.
Savage.
We recognize Iran's rights, but with those rights come responsibilities. And time and again, the Iranian government has failed to meet those responsibilities. Iran concealed a nuclear enrichment facility in Qom that raised serious questions about the nature of its program. Iran further violated its own obligations under UN Security Council resolutions to suspend uranium enrichment. Instead, they're enriching up to 20%.
Well, there's President Obama now going on about how they're enriching their uranium, how they're hiding their nuclear weapons facilities or their nuclear programs across Iran. And yet, what is he doing? He's essentially dithering. He is essentially relying on sanctions, relying on dialogue. In the meantime, when the Israelis want to act, he is telling them not to go to war. Let me handle this. And so he's tied the Israelis with both hands around their behind their back. He has effectively neutered the Israeli people and Benjamin Netanyahu. And the question you have to ask yourself is why? Why is President Obama so determined to take the lead on this issue and push diplomacy when he knows all it's doing is buying the mullahs more time? Now think about this. We don't know how far advanced the Iranians are. They could get a bomb in 2 months. They could get a bomb in 3 months. If they get a bomb, as Obama would put it, it's a game changer. It changes absolutely everything. This could be the end of the Jews and the Israeli state as we know it. This could lead to a major war in the Middle East. And so gas prices are now going up. Iran has now cut off its oil supply to Europe. We are paying for his dithering. And yet, there is the Chicago cynical Machiavellian advisor behind the scenes, David Axelrod. And Axelrod is telling him, think October surprise. Wait, wait. Don't go now. Don't tell Netanyahu to attack now. You tell Netanyahu, wait, we'll do your dirty work for you. But only if it leads to Obama's re-election. And so, my friends, they are going to wait till August or September or maybe even early October. And when the polls show that these rising gas prices are high and soaring and unemployment remains high and the debt and the deficit are destroying the middle class, and the American people have turned decisively against Obama, then he will launch the unleash the dogs of war. And that's how he plans to win re-election. Do you want to pay $5 a gallon to help Obama get re-elected? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
After about 100 years of domination, the capitalist system and existing world order are unable to provide appropriate solutions to the problems that society faces. Thus, their demise has arrived.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. That was the translator for Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, at a recent UN speech going on about the end of capitalism, the end of the West, the end of America. And yet, as the Iranians are sharpening the knives, sending out their warships into the Mediterranean, practicing war games and war exercises, gas prices now soaring. They have now cut off their gas supplies and oil sales to Europe. You are paying for it at the pump and will pay even more for it. The Obama administration dithers. And my question to you is a very simple one. Are you willing to pay $5, $5.50 a gallon because of Obama's incompetence and potentially because of his October surprise to wait as close as possible to the election to launch a devastating airstrike against the Iranian regime? Are you willing to pay for Obama's re-election? 1-800-449-8255. Jim in New York, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. It's an honor to speak to you, sir.
My pleasure, Jim.
I just have a quick question. I would hope you would touch on. What I would like to know is, why do our enemies not listen to us and laugh at us, yet our leaders and our administration, yet our friends will still listen? If the Israeli people, they're not worried about $5 a gallon gas, they're worried about living, why would they listen to Obama and not act unilaterally on their own? I'll hang up and listen to your response on the radio. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Jim, I'll tell you why, and this is what high-ranking, I have to be careful how I couch this, but this is how high-ranking Israeli sources have said to me. If Netanyahu goes now and launches a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities without the backing of the Obama administration, and remember, this is a very key point, Obama has told Netanyahu repeatedly, if you bomb Iran, we will not back Israel. We will back Iran. We will provide you no political cover, no diplomatic support. You will be completely isolated. The Israelis know that if they launch an attack on Iran, they're going to get hit by Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza. The Muslim Brotherhood is going to tear up the treaty that Egypt has with Israel, and they will unleash the Egyptian army. So the Israelis are surrounded, literally surrounded. They will face a three-front war. Furthermore, Iran has the biggest missile arsenal in the Middle East. This, my friends, is not some this is not Libya. This is not some little inconsequential Arab country or Muslim country. This is a country with 70 million people, one of the world's largest oil reserves, one of the largest land armies in the Middle East, huge missile missile systems and ballistic missiles. They could rain missiles upon Israel. They will hit Tel Aviv. They will hit Jerusalem. They will hit Haifa. They will literally blanket Israel. So the Israelis are worried that this could trigger an all-out Arab-Muslim war upon the Jewish state and wipe them into the sea. So they need American support. They need American backing. That's why Netanyahu's hands are tied. And this, my friends, goes to the heart of the issue. Dan Gillerman, Israel's former ambassador to the United Nations, recently said this: Israel has never asked one American soldier or troop to die for the state of Israel, for the Jewish people. Israelis have always defended their own country in 48, in 67, in 73. That's not the issue. The Israelis are not asking Americans to die. To die for the Jewish state. What they are asking for is simply that America backs its ally, that it gives it international credibility and international support, meaning no UN sanctions, meaning helping to arm Israel to the teeth, meaning a warning to other Arab countries that if you attack Israel, America will defend its ally. Period. Full stop. That's all the Israelis are asking for. The Israelis are not like the Albanians in Kosovo. They're not asking America to do their dirty work for them. The Israelis could take on the Iranians. The Israelis could topple the mullahs. The Iranians could destroy their nuclear facilities. But it's Obama who refuses to allow Israel to defend their own country. So think about it. It's as obvious as day. Who are you going to support? Your mortal enemy who calls for your destruction and calls you the great Satan? Or your closest friend and ally in the Middle East, Israel? And Obama is effectively siding with the Iranians. Cynically. Because he wants the Iran card in his back pocket should he need it for re-election. That's the kind of man we have in the White House. That's the kind of anti-American socialist, anti-American leftist, anti-Israel Marxist that we have. He hates America, he hates the West, and he hates the Jews. And if nobody else has the guts to say it, I will. 1-800-449-8255. Pete in West Virginia, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, good to be with you. It's Keith. That's okay, though. Hey, listen, to answer your question, no, I am not willing to fund Obama's reelection with higher gas prices. But I'm afraid that there are too many Americans that will. There are too many Americans that the gas price will get so high and then he'll pull his October surprise, like you say, and they will fall right in line and vote for the guy. I cannot understand. I couldn't understand how I got elected 3.5 years ago, but I can understand that with unemployment where it is, gas prices where they are, how the man even has a chance in Hades of getting reelected. I cannot understand that. And the stands he's taken against Israel, how can this be happening?
Keith, look, this is the not the $64,000 question. To me, the $64 million question. I ask myself this question now every day for the last 3.5 years. We are selling our souls basically for 8.3% unemployment. You hear the media now. That's all they keep saying now for months now. Oh, it's the trend line. The trend line. It's going down. It's 9%. It's 8.6%. It's 8.5%. Now it's 8.3%. What they're not telling you are the millions of people who've given up looking for work. They've dropped out of the labor force. So that's why they're not even included as unemployed. The real unemployment rate is 10, 11, 12%. Don't even take my word for it. The Congressional Budget Office even says that. You add people who are working part-time, who actually want to work full-time, people who are underemployed, our unemployment rate is 15, 16, 17%. It's like the Great Depression. And yet the media is going on and on. Things are turning around. Things are turning around. Oh, it's worked. The stimulus has worked. Obamanomics has worked. But do you remember when Bush was in power in 2004? The country was at 5% unemployment. Five. Not 8.3, 5. Horrible. I've never seen an economy like this. It's a disaster. It's a recession. It's the Bush recession. And then the other hypocrisy, and to me, the mother of all hypocrisies. Do you remember in 2003 and 2004, what was the argument that the radical leftists in this country made? CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, the Democrats, Obama made it. Hillary Clinton made it. John Kerry made it. Bush took us to war in Iraq to win re-election. It was all about Karl Rove and George Bush trying to win re-election. Where's the anti-war left now? How come they're not criticizing Obama for rattling his saber with Iran? How come when now Obama says, and through his defense secretary, Leon Panetta came out and said, Iran will not get the bomb, period. Meaning, wink, 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 wink. We're going to hit them, but in September or October, when it suits our political interests. Nobody from the left cries out. None of these anti-war leftists come out and say, oh, warmonger, Hitler, imperialist, militarist, fascist, the way they call George Bush. No. When Obama sent that phony troop surge into Afghanistan, nobody lifted a finger on the left. Nobody said a word. When he ran that illegal, unconstitutional war in Libya, nobody on the left said anything. My friends, look at the blatant hypocrisy that we are seeing all around us. This man is now marching us into potential disaster, because if you wait until September or October, it could be too late. They may have the bomb by then. That's how dangerous and cynical this man is. 1-800-449-8255. Pete in New York, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff, I agree with you 100% about this whole thing, but I'm going to take it one step further. If you compare Mr. Obama to Mr. Stalin during the Hitler regime, he's playing the same chess game. It's a chess game to take power of the American people. And people in this country are so blind to it that don't want to open their eyes. The Commie-crack party, as I call it, because they infiltrated the Democratic Party. And what they're going to do is they're going to force the Democrats, the true Democrats, out. Just watch. It's happening. I see it. When they disagree with him, they push him out.
Pete, you're completely right. But look, you want to know why Obama is able to seize so much power? Let's be candid. Okay, there are very few places left in America where we can have an honest discussion where we still have the First Amendment and free speech. Okay? We're not MS Left BC here. We don't censor and blacklist people. We can talk about honest issues in an honest way. What are Americans interested in? Here you have Iran cutting off their gas to the world market. You have gas prices soaring, okay? We know this is going on. You have American aircraft carriers performing exercises in the Strait of Hormuz. Basically, Iran is now closing the Strait of Hormuz, where most of the world's oil comes from, okay? They're threatening us. They're blackmailing us, and we're conducting American military exercises. What is America fixated on all weekend? Whitney Houston. Whitney Houston, the farewell to Whitney Houston, the funeral of Whitney Houston. What a beautiful person Whitney Houston was. What a great role model Whitney Houston is. Now, have you noticed nobody mentioned the obvious fact about Whitney Houston? She died because she was a drug addict, a crack addict. That's why. Way before her time. Nobody mentions that. She's the great role model, like Michael Jackson. Nobody mentioned the fact that he was a drug addict. Oh, don't mention that. Great role model. Whitney Houston. That's all people want to talk about. Whitney, how Whitney was great, how Whitney was so beloved. The trailblazer, Whitney Houston, the cultural icon, Whitney Houston. So this is the America that we now live in. It is the United States of entertainment. We're like the late Roman Empire. Give us our gladiators. Give us our Colosseum. Give us our welfare, our bread, our circuses. And we don't give a damn about the rest. Now, that's the truth of the matter. So, if this is the kind of country we live in, how do you expect us to survive? More than that, how do you expect our allies to survive? The Israelis, they don't have a luxury of the Whitney Houstons. They're up against the mullahs. They know what radical Islam is. 1-800-449-8255. Are you willing to pay $5 a gallon to help Obama get reelected? Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Common cause and common concerns with Israel and with the international community about Iran. We've made very clear that Iran will not develop a nuclear weapon. We will not tolerate an Iran that has a nuclear weapon.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. You just heard Defense Secretary Leon Panetta recently again repeated, they will not tolerate a nuclear-armed Iran. Wink, wink. We're looking at a September-October surprise. They're hinting it. They're basically telegraphing it. Are you willing to pay for Obama's reelection? I want to hear from you. Barbara in Las Vegas, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, hello. I agree with you. 100%, but what can we do about this? Should people call into the White House, or what can we do?
Well, I think the most important thing, Barbara, is that we have to know who we have in the White House. We have to know the depths that he's willing to go to secure his hold on power, how he's willing to lie to the American people, jeopardize the fate and very existence of the Jews, betray the national security interests of the United States. Look, we could end this Iran problem in 3 weeks, and I'll tell you exactly how you do it. You arm and support and fund the anti-regime insurgency that exists within Iran. 80 to 85% of the Iranian people can't stand Ahmadinejad. They don't want the nuclear bomb. They know what the mullahs have in store for them. They can see that they're going to be cannon fodder for these fanatics and their dreams of a nuclear apocalypse. The Iranian people aren't stupid. They're tired of Islamic fundamentalism. They're tired of these mullahs. So we have the Iranian people backing us. In fact, in the summer of 2009, the Iranian people rose. They rose up. And they went to the streets by the millions, demanding that Ahmadinejad step down after fraudulently engineering the elections. After he literally grasped onto power by stealing the election. And where was Obama? Silence. Didn't say a word. Didn't lift a finger. Nothing. Oh, when it comes to the Muslim Brotherhood. Oh, he's all for it. He's all for it. When it comes to the Islamists getting power in Tunisia, he's all for it. Oh, no, no problem. Libya, no problem. But when it comes to a pro-American, genuine democracy movement, he sold them down the river. So, number one, we can do exactly what Ronald Reagan did in Poland in solidarity. You subvert the regime internally. And believe me, the Iranians would love to get rid of these guys. Without firing a bullet, the Iranian regime could collapse. But secondly, obviously, you do what Nixon did in 1973. You tell the Iranians, guys, this is in your backyard. They want to wipe you off the face of the earth. You want to defend yourself? You have every right to defend yourself. You want to knock off the regime? Knock him off. And then you tell the Saudis, because the Saudi Arabia doesn't want Iran to get the bomb. I don't want to get too complicated here, but the Sunnis don't want Shiite Iran to get the bomb. I would tell the Saudis, guys, you're going to stop with your publicly criticizing America and Israel, but privately telling us you want us to bomb Iran. You're going to open up the airspace so the Israelis can go through Saudi Arabia to devastate Iran, and you're going to pay for it, okay? And we're going to arm the Israelis to the teeth. We're going to give them the missiles, the planes, everything that they need to accomplish the mission. And I guarantee you, that regime falls in less than 21 days, and it's over. And then when Iran falls, Hezbollah falls. Hezbollah falls, Hamas falls. Hamas falls, the Brotherhood will fall. My friends, that's a pro-American Reaganite foreign policy. Now, who's articulating that among the Republicans? It's not Mitt Romney. It's not Newt Gingrich. It's not Rick Santorum. It's only Jeff Cooner right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael is off tonight. My buddy, I just want to take the time to thank you once again, my friend, for the wonderful honor and opportunity of sitting in for you tonight. I am looking forward to your blockbuster upcoming book, Trickle Down Tyranny. If it's as good as the last one, Michael, I think it'll sell just as well. And it could be even more timely. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, for the absolute latest must-read sizzling stories. Frankly, stories you usually can't get anywhere else except on michaelsavage.com. And there's an issue in particular that has now erupted over the last couple days that I want to draw all of your attention to. Rick Santorum is now surging in the polls. The former Pennsylvania senator was considered in many ways a third-tier candidate. And yet, he shocked the establishment by winning Iowa. He then has come in, he took Minnesota, he won Colorado, he even won Missouri. Even though Missouri was a non-binding primary, meaning essentially there were no delegates awarded, what they call a beauty pageant, still, it showed that Santorum is in many ways slowly becoming the alternative to Romney, the non-Romney alternative. And now, he is being put under the media spotlight. They are targeting him. They are going after every statement that he's made. And in particular, Santorum's aide has recently come out in an interview on MSNBC with Andrea Mitchells, who I have to tell you, if she's there because of her looks, I don't know what the people at MSNBC are thinking. That's all I have to say. But anyway, let that go. At least on Fox, you have some eye candy. There's something to look at. But this, Andrea Mitchell, I don't understand. But let that go. Let it go. Let it go. I don't know. Maybe some people like that. I don't know. I don't know. But this aide is on MSNBC with Andrea Mitchell. And referring to Obama's radical environmental policies, at one moment the aide misspoke and said Obama's radical Muslim policies. And now the liberal media is pouncing. Was this a Freudian slip? Was this some sort of a signal, a wink, wink to many Tea Party Republicans saying, yes, Obama has been governing as a radical Muslim? This comes on top of Santorum was recently in Ohio on Saturday, which is going to be a key state on March 6th on Super Tuesday. Ohio and Georgia have the two most delegates of the 10 states up for grabs on Super Tuesday. And in front of a Christian group, Rick Santorum openly said that Obama's presidency, his entire radical socialist agenda, is really in many ways a phony theology. That Obama in many ways is pushing, he didn't actually say this, but the implication was clear, an anti-Christian agenda, a non-Christian agenda. An agenda, as he put it, that is not based upon biblical principles. My friends, here is Santorum in his own words. Boys, roll clip 7.
It's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about your quality of life. It's not about your jobs. It's about some phony ideal. Some phony theology. Oh, not a theology based on the Bible. Different theology.
Notice the applause. Notice the applause. Everybody's like, finally, somebody had the guts to say it. Somebody had the guts to say that Obama is pushing a pseudo-religion, a secular socialist radicalism upon America that in many ways is anti-Bible, anti-Christian, anti-American. And yet the liberal media pounced. Are you questioning Obama's religion? Are you saying he's not a Christian? Are you saying he's somehow other? Are you saying he's somehow un-American? Now, my friends, let me be very candid with you, members of the Savage Nation. I never really gave Rick Santorum serious consideration for many reasons. The most important being is I don't think he can win. Because for months I've been seeing him at 2%, 3%, 4%, 5% in the polls. So he looks to me as a sort of third-tier candidate. So nice guy, nice family. Was a pro-life senator for two terms from Pennsylvania. In many ways, he voted with the establishment. He voted for No Child Left Behind. He voted for Bush's prescription drug benefit. He voted for the Bridge to Nowhere, a big government Bush-style Republican. But he was as pro-family, pro-life, against abortion. I don't have any qualms with Rick Santorum on social issues. I like Rick Santorum on social issues. But I never saw him as a top-tier heavyweight candidate. When he made that comment on Saturday, I said, you know what? If this guy's got the guts to say something like that, finally say the truth about the president of the United States, I'm going to give him a good hard look. I'm going to give him a chance to persuade me. Maybe he is better than Gingrich. Maybe he is better than Romney. But then on Sunday, when he's on CBS's with Bob Schieffer, that liberal hack, this basically mouthpiece for Barack Obama, who to me, he looked like he's a walking corpse. Bob Schieffer, to me, is like, he must be going on 105 or something. You look at him, honestly, it's like, hello, Bob. You awake, Bob. You're dead, Bob. Hello, is there a heartbeat? But anyway, let it go. He's on Bob Schieffer. And Bob Schieffer says to him, hold on now. You're almost saying the president's not a Christian. How dare you say that? And look how brittle Santorum is. Look how he backs away the moment he gets resistance or attacks from the liberal establishment. Boys, roll clip 10.
Well, how does that translate into some sort of theology that the president's theology is not based on the Bible? I mean, that suggests that he's not a Christian.
No, I wasn't suggesting the president's not a Christian. I accept the fact that the president's a Christian. I just said that when you have a worldview that elevates the earth above man and says that, you know, we can't take those resources because we're going to harm the earth by things that are that frankly are just not scientifically proven, like, for example, the politicization of the whole global warming debate. I mean, this is just all an attempt to to centralize power and to give more power to the government.
Now, he's completely right. Obama is a radical environmentalist. Obama is a radical socialist. Obama, like many on the left, they worship Gaia, Mother Earth. But even more than that, and this is to me what I find mind-bending, and I don't understand why somebody just doesn't say it. By Obama's own admission, he's not a Christian. Don't even take my word for it. I don't have to look at the fact that he doesn't go to church. I don't have to look at the fact that he has no particular denomination. Okay, leave that aside. He spent 20 years in the church of Reverend Jeremiah Wright. That's the pastor who married him and Michelle. That's the pastor who supposedly baptized his children. That's been the church that he was affiliated with for most of his adult life. By his own admission, that was his man. That was his church. What does Reverend Jeremiah Wright preach? He preaches black liberation theology. What is black liberation theology? Is it Christian? It's completely not Christian. It preaches black nationalism. It preaches hatred of the West. It preaches anti-colonialism. And it preaches Marxism. It says that the oppressed people of the third world, the oppressed people of the Muslim world, the people of Africa, the people of Asia, the reason why they're so poor, the reason why they're so oppressed is because of the Christian West, is because of the white man. In other words, they substitute Jesus Christ for Karl Marx on the cross. It's literally Karl Marx on the crucifix. There's no Christian cross. There's no crucifix in Reverend Wright's church. He's not a Christian. They do not believe in the divinity of Christ, which is the very definition of Christianity. Now, I'm not saying you need to believe it. That's up to you. I'm a practicing Catholic. I believe it. I'm a practicing Christian. But let that go. That's not the issue. Obama says he's a Christian. Now, when it's time for re-election, the media keeps now saying, no, he's a Christian, he's a Christian. Well, the definition of Christianity is to believe in the divinity of Christ. Reverend Jeremiah Wright does not believe in the divinity of Christ. It's a political movement. So what Obama has been doing now for the last 3.5 years is he has been implementing the ideology of Reverend Jeremiah Wright. He has been implementing black liberation theology. Take his recent war on the Catholic Church. How is this in any way anything other than an anti-Christian, anti-religious act by a bigot? It is forcing every religious organization to violate their conscience rights, to violate their religious freedom, to provide free birth control and sterilization, even the morning after pill. My friends, we have a non-Christian in the White House. We have an anti-Christian in the White House. And so my question to you is this. When a man's radical socialism infuses every aspect of his administration, every aspect of his worldview, every aspect of every policy that he's passed, is he not practicing a phony theology? Is Obama a non-Christian? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. I mentioned in the previous segment that there was a prominent Santorum aide who was on MSNBC with Andrea Mitchell just a couple days ago. It's all over the Drudge Report now. Apparently, she misspoke. Her name is Alice Stewart. She was obviously talking about Obama's green agenda, his desire to push for clean energy, his desire, obviously, to ram through a radical environmentalist policies across America, especially the Keystone Pipeline issue. But she slipped up, and she didn't say radical environmentalist policies. At one time, she said radical Muslim policies. Here is Santorum's aide, Alice Stewart, in her own words. Boys, roll.
He's referring to the president's policies in terms of the radical Islamic policies the president has, and specifically in terms of the energy exploration. Case in point, the Keystone Pipeline. Here's radical environmentalist policies caused him to nix a program that would help energy exploration and create jobs in this country, and that is key to helping with the gas prices in this country, as well as job creation. And what he's going to see is the gas prices continue to rise. His popularity is going to go down with it.
All right. The media is now up in arms. They're now saying this was deliberate. This was insulting. She's questioning Obama's loyalty to America. She's basically giving some sort of a subtle telegraphic signal to Tea Party supporters all across the Midwest, especially in Ohio and in Michigan. It's obvious by the context that she misspoke, but leave that aside. That's clear. Obviously, she misspoke. Do you think accidentally she actually spoke the truth? Is Obama pursuing radical Islamic policies, radical Muslim policies in the White House? Why is this somehow not open to debate? Is this still not a free country? We can't discuss this anymore? Some topics now are completely taboo. We can't even talk about things in America anymore. So I want to hear from you, 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe that Santorum's aide inadvertently touched on a very key point? Is Obama pursuing radical Muslim policies? 1-800-449-8255. Cindy in Las Vegas, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, thank you so much. Talk about your current subject. Is Obama's never shown anything to us that he is a Christian. Not that he's not a Christian, but that he is a Christian. And it touches my my family very, very poignantly. My mom and dad moved to Israel 18 years ago and made Aliyah as Messianic Jews. My dad's buried there. He died in November, and now my mom still lives there. And his whole policy about, you know, what he's doing with the Middle East and what you were talking about earlier, I'd never heard it put so intelligently to where I would understand it, Obama's stance on how he's dealing with the whole Iranian issue.
Cindy, let me be very candid with you. Look, I don't want to tell you what to do. It's you. It's your family. I don't want to get involved. But if I were you, I would get your mother out of Israel and I would bring her back to where you are in Las Vegas, because the winds of war are now blowing. And Obama is going to throw the Jewish people under the bus. He is not a Christian. By his own admission, he's not a Christian. His policies are blatantly anti-Christian. They're anti-biblical. They're anti-Israel. You want to understand this man in a nutshell? He is an anti-colonial, far left-wing radical who despises America, despises Israel, and despises the West. And he is unleashing destruction right in front of our very eyes. 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
As a boy, I spent several years in Indonesia and heard the call of the azan at the break of dawn and at the fall of dusk. As a young man, I worked in Chicago communities where many found dignity and peace in their Muslim faith. As a student of history, I also know civilization's debt to Islam. Assalamu alaikum.
This is Jeff Cooner from The Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. That was Obama in his famous speech in Cairo in 2009. You don't think he's pushing radical Muslim policies?
Assalamu alaikum.
No. Nothing radical, nothing Muslim there. Now, stand back for a second. In that speech in Cairo, many people forget this now. He said that one of his primary roles and one of his primary aims as president of the United States, one of his primary duties was to, quote, combat negative stereotypes of Islam. Where is that in the U.S. Constitution? Where is it said that somehow the president now, one of his job description, part of his job description, is to actually combat negative stereotypes of Islam? This is the man who has bent over backwards to appease the mullahs in Iran. This is the man who pulled the rug out from underneath our closest ally in the Arab world, Hosni Mubarak. He has empowered the Muslim Brotherhood. He is the one who empowered Al-Qaeda and radical Islam in Libya. This is the man who has forced America out of Iraq in defeat. This is the man that is losing us the war in Afghanistan. And you're going to tell me with a straight face that he's not pushing radical Muslim policies? Of course he's pushing radical Muslim policies. He's the best thing that's ever happened to the radical Muslim world in terms of a leader of the United States. 1-800-449-8255. Do you believe Obama is pushing radical Muslim agenda? I want to hear from you. Lamar in New York, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Actually, I wanted to comment on the Mideast and Iranian crisis that we seem to be approaching.
Go ahead,
but in reference to President Obama, at the beginning of his term, he had a conference in Washington which invited both Arabs and Africans to invest and buy up businesses in the United States. So that's where I leave that point. But the issue of nuclear proliferation is a longstanding UN issue, and Iran's shut off of oil distribution is actually a response to the international sanctions, and it's their form of political intimidation.
Okay. Well, I mean, she just hung up. All right, Lamar, I think your point is that somehow the Iranians are just reacting, that the international community is to blame, that the West is to blame. It's basically the Ron Paul argument, that we're basically backing the mullahs into a corner, and they have no choice now but to cut off gas to the Europeans. Look, this is a very simple issue. The sanctions would disappear in a second. International isolation would disappear in a second. There would be no saber rattling of any kind if the mullahs would just do one thing: stop trying to build a nuclear bomb. So this is completely in Iran's court. This is completely in the mullah's court. Nobody is forcing Iran to build a bomb. And if they desire to build a bomb, and they're telling us they're going to wipe Israel off the map, and they're telling us they're going to they want to rid the world of, quote, the great Satan, meaning America, then I'm sorry, but the Iranians have brought this upon themselves. So to not apply sanctions is suicide. To not apply diplomatic pressure is suicide. To not respond eventually militarily is suicide. Now, I'm not willing to put my future and that of my children in the hands of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. We tried that with Hitler. It didn't work. It won't work again this time. Let's go to Lisa in Oregon. Thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. Obama definitely is not a Christian. You can tell the tree by its fruits. And I would definitely agree with you and say that he is pressing a radical Muslim agenda. Within the teachings of the Quran and the Hadith, it is well known that it is okay for a Muslim to lie and to take on a personality or a way of life to deceive for the ultimate goal.
Well, look, Lisa, there are two, I think, schools of thought on this. And I have to say, I'm going to be very candid with all of you. I waver between both. One school of thought is what you're expressing right now, which is that he is secretly a Muslim, that he was raised by a Muslim father, his father was a Muslim from Kenya. His stepfather, he was raised as a Muslim. He went to a Muslim religious school, a madrasa, by his own admission when he was a boy in Indonesia, and that essentially he is a closet Muslim. And if you understand that, you understand his entire policy towards Israel, towards the Middle East, and towards America. There is another school of thought, which is that Obama is not a religious Muslim, but he is a cultural Muslim, meaning he is a product of the academic left. In fact, he holds no religion. He's non-Christian, non-Muslim, just anti-Christian and anti-religion in general, except for Islam. Why? Because according to the academic left, according to multicultural liberalism, as you see in the academia today, Islam is an oppressed religion. Islam is in the Middle East. Islam is in Africa. Islam is in Asia. And that's where the oppressed third world people are. That was essentially Obama's father. Obama's father, which is why Obama's autobiography is called Dreams from My Father. Obama says openly in his autobiography, my father saw political Islam as a weapon against the West, that the Muslim peoples were oppressed by the Christian West, in particular America. And that's why his father was a radical socialist, a radical anti-American, and a radical anti-colonialist. So he's not supporting Islam because he's somehow a faithful believer, but because he sees cultural Islam as a victim of American imperialism. I have to tell you the truth. Having witnessed this man in the White House, knowing the people he associates himself with, I don't think he has any religious beliefs whatsoever. I think he is an old-style, hard socialist radical in the mold of Saul Alinsky. He sees himself as a socialist dictator. He hates the West. He hates America. He hates the Judeo-Christian roots of our civilization. And he simply loves the Muslim world because he believes Islam is a natural enemy of secular socialism because they share one common enemy, and that is America. They are natural allies. That's why he betrays Israel. That's why he undercuts America. That's why he's destroying capitalism. That's why he's destroying us on the world stage.
Assalamu alaikum.
That's exactly how he views it. That's why I love it. 1-800-449-8255. I want to hear what you think. Catherine in New York, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Jeff. It's Catherine in Jersey.
Oh, sorry. Catherine in Jersey.
That's okay. We're right next door to one another. Anyway, Obama, in one of his first speeches, referred to America as no longer a Christian nation. He would dismiss saying the word God in speeches that he was giving until Congress sent him a letter chastising for it. He considers that if his daughters became pregnant, that they should not be punished by a baby.
Yeah, I mean, Catherine, look, Islam means literally submission. It means submission to God's will. This is what people don't understand about Muslim militants and about radical Islam. They believe in submission. And they believe that Christians and Jews should submit to the religion and theology and theocracy of Islam. That's why, if you've noticed, look, it's on michaelsavage.com. Don't even take my word for it. Christians and Jews are dropping like flies in Egypt, right there on the Temple Mount in Israel. Muslims are stoning Christians. So we are seeing anti-Christian violence being instigated by radical Islamists all across the Middle East, all across Africa, Nigeria. Just a couple weeks ago, massive bombings by Muslim militants against Christians. We are seeing it everywhere. Where is President Obama? Why doesn't he ever speak out? He always goes on about when Muslims are being oppressed, if you've noticed that, when the Libyans in Benghazi were threatened by Gaddafi's forces. Oh, we can't let a humanitarian nightmare. No, can't allow that to happen. Tell me, what about the Christians in Nigeria? What about the Christians in Saudi Arabia? What about the Christians in Egypt? What about the Christians in Iraq who are being wiped out as we speak?
Assalamu alaikum.
That's the only answer you need to know. That's all he cares about, my friends. That is all he cares about. It is to defend the interests of political Islam, because in his view, America is the enemy. We are a post-Christian nation. We are a secular liberal nation. Our Christian roots mean nothing. That's why he's pushing abortion on demand. That's why he's ramming free birth control down our throats. That's why he's attacking the Roman Catholic Church. That's why he denigrates our Christian roots. Because he wants us to be just like Europe, a culture of death, where secular liberalism is triumphant, and the secular liberal elite, led by him, control our very lives. That's all he wants. And he knows the biggest battering ram against America, particular radical Islamists. If radical Islam spreads, then America is weakened. And that's all Obama ever cares about. My friends, this is a direct, deliberate plan to create a post-American world. That's what Obama's been gunning for 3.5 years. And if he wins re-election, my friends, he just may fulfill it. 1-800-449-8255. Quickly, Rick in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, did we forget about when he went to Saudi Arabia and the prince put about a 20-pound gold chain around his neck?
Oh, I mean, and he bows. I mean, what American president bows to a foreign leader? Never mind the Saudis, who are funding thousands of radical madrasas all across the Middle East, all across Pakistan. 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. But you won't hear that from Barack Hussein Obama. You won't hear that from the con man in the White House. To me, it's unbelievable. Christians cannot build a church. Jews cannot build a synagogue in Saudi Arabia. You can't even wear a crucifix in public. They will confiscate it from you and they will throw you in prison. If you convert from being a Muslim to being a Christian, or God forbid, to being a Jew, they will stone you and kill you. Where's Obama? Where's Hillary Clinton? Where's Nancy Pelosi? But oh my God, if there's one Libyan Muslim that's being shot by Gaddafi, no, we have to send in the American Air Force. It's intolerable. My friends, we know who he is. We have unveiled him here on the Savage Nation. And my question to you is a very simple one. How do you feel about the fact that Obama is a non-Christian? Do you think that a Judeo-Christian country should at least demand and expect that their president be some kind of a Christian? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Assalamu alaikum. I also know that Islam has always been a part of America's story. The first nation to recognize my country was Morocco. In signing the Treaty of Tripoli in 1796, our second president, John Adams, wrote, "The United States has in itself no character of enmity against the laws, religion, or tranquility of Muslims."
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. That was Obama in Cairo in 2009. We've always been friends with the Muslim world. John Adams loved the Muslim world. George Washington loved the Muslim world. Morocco was the first country to recognize the United States. There you go. There you have it. We're permanently indebted to the Muslim world. Permanently indebted. Permanently. Actually, he's actually factually wrong. People don't know that, but it wasn't Morocco that was the first, technically, if you want to call it a country, but it was actually the city, it was a city-state, Dubrovnik, which is in today in modern-day Croatia, was the first to recognize the United States. So even his history is completely wrong, just on that score. But let that go. Look at how he keeps championing and promoting the Muslim faith, the Muslim world, Muslim civilization. Look how he's constantly looking to promote the interests of radical Islam in Libya, in Egypt, in the Palestinian territories, in Lebanon, in Iran, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Take Syria. I'm not a fan of the Assad regime. Believe me, I can't stand that regime. But what happens when he goes? What happens when those people protesting on the streets, many of whom now are being supported by the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, many of the same people who helped overthrow Gaddafi, now come into power? You will have a Sunni theocracy in Syria. Yes, Assad is horrible, but what will come after him? As those rebels, their own slogans say, the Alawites to the wall, the Christians to Beirut. There will be a massive religious and ethnic slaughter that will take place. But now you have Obama. Now you have Hillary Clinton talking about a no-fly zone. Maybe even arming the rebels, helping to overthrow Bashar Assad. Everywhere this man goes, he empowers the radical Islamists. You think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. 1-800-449-8255. Is Obama pushing radical Muslim agenda? I want to hear from you. George in Pittsburgh, PA, you're on the Savage Nation.
I'd like to make 2 points. The first point that I would like to make is I suspected his Christianity when he spoke at George Mason University earlier in his presidency at Gaston Hall, and he covered up the symbol of Christianity. And I have for a long time, and I want to thank you very much because you're the first person I've had say it. If you look at what he's done in the Middle East from the perspective of emboldening radical Islam, from not helping the people who wanted to overthrow Ahmadinejad in Iran, to what he's done in Libya, to what he's done in Egypt, Iraq, and now you're talking about Syria.
George, look, to me, the writing is on the wall. This man has made it his objective to subordinate and destroy American power in the service of interests of America's enemies. That's why he's throwing Israel under the bus. That's why he's throwing all of our European allies under the bus. And eventually, my friends, he will throw all of us under the bus. Mark my words, Obama the Destroyer, as Michael Savage so eloquently put it, is on the warpath. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Assalamu alaikum.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Michael, my buddy, I just want to thank you one last time for having me fill in for you tonight. I can't tell you what a joy and pleasure it's been. You have a remarkable show, a groundbreaking show, a trailblazing show, and an absolutely one of the most outstanding audiences I've ever seen. Bottom of my heart. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest must-read stories that, frankly, you will not get anywhere else. Some stuff that just is absolutely superb analysis, great news scoops, really with angles, and frankly, from sources that you just will not find anywhere else in the mainstream media. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. Let me just change pace a little bit. We know that America is in cultural decay. We know that. The literature overwhelmingly shows it. You look at every major index. Family breakdown, out-of-wedlock teen, gay marriage, pornography. We are slowly rotting from within. Yet there is one particular example, a recent study, that I want to direct all of your attention to. It has now come out, and this to me is a stunning statistic. I believe it's a cultural watershed, that a majority of women under the age of 30, who have children, now have children out of wedlock. Over 50% of births to women under the age of 30 now come from non-married homes. It used to be called illegitimacy. It is now the new normal. Now think of this for a second. We are now rearing a generation that will not have a stable family two-parent home. Most likely the kind of home that you came from. Or that if you didn't come from, it was the norm in society. It was the ideal in society. It was something that if you didn't have, you felt, well, I should have. And I will have it. But now, we have so destroyed the family. The sexual revolution has become so woven into the fabric of American society and American life that many women, young women, and it's not just teenagers, it's women in their 20s, now choose as a lifestyle to deliberately have children out of wedlock. My friends, this is going to lead to a moral and cultural catastrophe. And this is not Jeff Cooner pounding the pulpit. This is not Jeff Cooner on Sunday preaching from a Bible thumper preaching from the pulpit. These are facts. Children need a father and a mother. Now look, sometimes divorce is inevitable. I know in particular somebody very close in my family who we have encouraged over many years because she has taken a lot of verbal and psychological abuse. It is bad for you. It is bad for the children. You must leave because this is not going to help anybody. And this may in fact end up violently. So there are many cases. I would say 10 to 15, 20% of cases in these horrible marriages where not only is divorce the proper course of action, I think, frankly, people have grounds for an annulment. But we're not talking about that anymore. What we're talking about now is 22, 23, 24-year-old women who have sex, promiscuous sex, birth control, no birth control, because frankly, sometimes in the heat of the moment, people forget the birth control. People don't think about condoms sometimes in the heat of passion. And then they have children out of wedlock. And then nobody makes the decision to get married. And so when you don't have a father in the home, you don't have a permanent male presence in the home, you get drugs, you get poverty, you get dysfunctionality, you get, especially when you have a male, a boy or a son, many of them grow up to be gangbangers because there is no father figure to impose order and discipline in the home. And let me be very confessional with all of you out there in the Savage Nation. My wife and I recently adopted a beautiful boy, 18 months. His name is Ashton. When we got the news that Ashton was being placed for adoption, we went to meet his birth mother. She had him out of wedlock. She was now with another man. This man wanted nothing to do with Ashton because it wasn't his child. She was now pregnant with his child. Now, they weren't married. And so she said, either I have a life with my new boyfriend, or he's going to leave me because he doesn't want to raise Ashton because it's not his. Now, I have to be very honest with you. I look at my beautiful boy, blonde hair, heart of gold. Literally, we take him to church. He shakes people's hands all the time. He kisses the cross on his own. The first thing in the morning, he kisses Jesus. Everybody says all that's missing are the wings. He's like a little cherub. And all I'm thinking is his name was Tony, the guy's name, the boyfriend. You didn't want to raise this child? This beautiful child? This is what happens in homes where there is not a mother or a father. It's not a lifestyle choice. The children get affected. The children end up being abandoned. If a man doesn't want to put a ring on your finger, he's telling you, I don't want to make a lifelong commitment to you. I don't think you and that child that you're carrying in your womb are worth me putting my entire honor and responsibility behind. That's what he's telling you. It's not going to end well. And the fact that you have all of these women now who are willing to have children out of wedlock, look how selfish they are. Nobody thinks about the children. No. Because it makes me feel good to have a child. Because I live in a suburban consumer materialistic culture where there are no values anymore. We don't have religion. We don't have family. We don't have the church. We don't have community. We have nothing. So let me fill up my inner existence, my meaningless inner existence, by having a baby. And somehow it'll be fun to have a baby because babies are cute. Yeah, babies are cute. They're also a ton of work. You stay up at night. You worry. They're sick. They have to be fed constantly. And before you know it, after 2 or 3 years, young women don't want to raise children anymore. Or the fathers leave. They don't put the interests of the child first. But it's all about sex. We just keep encouraging young kids. We don't say, go to school, get an education, get a degree. And then after you get a degree, then you get married. And then when you get married, you have children. That's the way it's been done for hundreds of years. No. Now, 12-year-olds, there's a story up, literally. 12-year-olds. 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds in California, paid for by California taxpayers, now can order condoms online for free. It comes in a yellow envelope. Better yet, I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. You want to pay your way through college? You're a young, attractive. Now going to internet sites where they are saying, I will sleep with you. I will be your girlfriend. I will be, what do you want to call it, your mistress, to use an older, outdated term, if you pay for my my education. You think I'm kidding? Boys, Roll clip 13.
You've heard, of course, of sex education in school, but have you heard of using sex to get an education? I'm not talking about stereotypical things like stripping. I'm talking about a website that matches students with so-called sugar daddies who help them get through school.
What has happened to us? These are the women of America who are basically prostituting themselves, looking for sugar daddies now to pay their way through school? My friends, we live in a Kim Kardashian Paris Hilton culture. And so my question to you is a simple one. What do you think the future of America will look like 10, 15, 20 years from now? When all of these children in out-of-wedlock homes grow up, is it a better future? Is it a worse future? And more than that, can you relate a personal experience where you've lived in a single-family home or in a home where the father and the mother were not married? How did it affect you? Was it a good home? Was it a good environment? Or was it a bad environment? 1-800-449-8255. Should women be having children out of wedlock? The New York Times says it's the new normal. I call it the new abnormal. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
You've heard, of course, of sex education in school, but have you heard of using sex to get an education? And I'm not talking about stereotypical things like stripping. I'm talking about a website that matches students with so-called sugar daddies who help them get through school.
The cost, actually, of using the website is probably just a couple of dollars a day. But the cost to a person's reputation down the line may last a lot longer. And we found the sex education trend to be that college students are among the fastest growing users.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. There you have it. One of the fastest growing trends now. Universities and the college campuses all across the country. Young co-eds, 18, 19 years old. They want to get their education paid for. They go to a website and they try to hook up with a sugar daddy. I sleep with you. You pay for my education. Very straightforward. Very straightforward. To me, this is obviously a form of prostitution. Now, in the old days, men would just have mistresses, or what was called a kept woman. Now we do it through the internet, and we make it seem like it's more progressive, it's more empowering. But really, it's the same principle. It's the same thing. A woman is selling her body to essentially get a free education, and some old geezer is willing to pay for it. And this is modern-day America, and it's done shamelessly. It's done publicly, and this is the world that we live in. Now the government is telling us that every employer has to give out free birth control. Now they have to give out the morning after pill. Now it's sterilization procedures. Now women are encouraged to go out and, hey, listen, don't take out a loan. God forbid, get a real job. We don't want you to wait tables or anything. No, sell your body. Lie on your back. That's the way to do it. That's the ticket to success. My friends, this is the sexual moral sewer that we now live in. And we're surprised that now a majority of births of women under 30 years of age are now in out-of-wedlock families where there is no father and mother in the home. What kind of an America do you think we're going to have? I'll tell you what it's going to be. It's going to be, look at Jersey Shore. It's MTV morality. Look at Paris Hilton. Look at Kim Kardashian. Look at reality television. Because that's the world that we're going to have. We're going to have families without fathers, without mothers, where children are not taken care of. And you know who benefits in the end? You guessed it, the state. Because now, increasingly, The state has become father and mother. Have you noticed that? The state now is able to give out condoms to 12, 13-year-olds. The state now teaches 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old sex education. The state now, I kid you not, there's another story out today where under Obama, he signed an act in 2010, the Kids Against Hunger Act, where now public schools are not just giving breakfast and lunch. No, no, no. They're giving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. After school dinner programs. They're feeding the children. What used to be done at the kitchen table, the responsibility of parents, now the state is literally feeding them. So we put them in daycare. The state raises them. The state feeds them. The state indoctrinates them. The state basically turns them into a mindless sexual progressive where they've all lost their virginity by the time they're 12 or 13. And then they end up being on food stamps or welfare. Welcome to Obama's America. Should children be wed? Should children be born out of wedlock? What do you make of this trend? Jeff Kuhner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. I want to hear from you. What was your personal experience having a mother and a father, or not having a mother or a father? If apparently now, according to the latest statistics, and this should frighten everybody, women 30 and under, the majority of births are now out of wedlock births. Children are now being reared in a generation where there is no mother and father, husband and wife. How was it like being raised in a single family home? Was it a good environment, a bad environment? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Derek in Florida, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, thanks for adopting Ashton to you and your wife, first of all. You know, Hollywood, academia, and the news media promote single motherhood. They encourage it. They glorify it in the movies. And it's going to end up, like you say, the state promulgates this. In England, they have subdermal contraception put into 13- and 14-year-old schoolgirls. And then they have parental non-disclosure laws that the parents aren't even informed about it. And this is where we're headed unless we reverse course.
No, you nailed it, Derek. I mean, this to me is, this is what's Orwellian. This is chilling. This is almost totalitarian, where they are deliberately subverting our children. They are basically, they're taking over our kids. There's no other way. It's a form, I don't want to overdo this, but it's almost a form of psychological, moral, and cultural kidnapping that's taking place. They're stealing our children from us, right from underneath our noses. Now, look, I don't want to go on about this adoption thing that I've gone through, but I tell this to everybody. It has opened my eyes because for 4 years, Grace and I were looking to adopt. And so we went, I can't tell you how many single teenage mothers I met. And contraception is rampant. Sexuality and promiscuity is rampant. For people like Planned Parenthood, for people like Obama, to come out and say that the biggest problem facing women today, in quote, in their reproductive health care, is lack of access to contraception, what? Go, there's contraception. Pharmacies, Safeways, grocery stores, you name it. Planned Parenthood gives them out for free. In school, they're in dispensing machines. You just put in money. There they are. Public bathrooms. The last thing people don't have access to is contraception. I swear, you know, when this whole debate began about, what is it, a week or two ago, I said, you know what, just for the hell of it, I'm at my local Safeway. I'm like, just for the hell of it, let me just see how hard it is to get contraception. My wife and I are Catholic, so we don't do birth control. All right? Full disclosure. I'm going down the aisle. It's right beside the frozen food section. It's even held bigger than the frozen food section. It's huge. Family planning. Now there's glow-in-the-dark condoms, purple condoms, blue condoms, buy two, get one free. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're going to tell me with a straight face there's not enough contraception in America? This is insanity. So, no, what they're doing is they are brainwashing our children. And it's this feminist ideology that somehow women can have it all. Women can have an incredible career, a fulfilling professional career where they're shooting up the corporate ranks, making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they look glamorous, and they look beautiful, and they look sexy, and they have time to work out, like in the soap operas or on the sitcoms. But they can also have a baby. And then there's a man, maybe, if they want. Maybe, for good sex. That's about it. But you don't need a father. Do you remember years ago, 20-some years ago, you remember when Dan Quayle went on about Murphy Brown, the television show? About how it was glamorizing women who have out-of-wedlock children, and the liberal left said, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Dan Quayle was right. And it's gotten worse. So now we're actively encouraging teenage girls to have as much sex as they want. And then, hey, you get pregnant? No problem. You don't need a father. Who cares about the kids? In fact, just on the break, one of the producers of the show made a very simple point. It's a brilliant point. The family is the microcosm of society. Now, when kids grow up, all they really know is their mother and their father. That's what they know. That's how they're socialized into this world. If a child doesn't have a father, or if a child doesn't have a mother, it's obvious because he needs two. The father is different and the mother is different. Men are different from women and a child needs both. Now look, I had friends who have came from single parent homes. They survived. Some of them actually have a very prosperous, successful life, but nobody told me it was great. Nobody said, oh, Jeff, oh, only having my mother, that was incredible. No, they all said, I wish I had a father. It would have made it so much easier. I succeeded in spite of not having a father. We're doing the opposite. We are glamorizing a lifestyle that punishes our children. And nobody seems to care. This to me, you want to know modern America in a nutshell? Nobody cares. It's like nothing. Nothing has an effect upon anybody. Just do your own thing. Have some sex, have a good time, and who cares? Forget about the children. 1-800-449-8255. David in Albany, New York. Thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yep, Jeff, I just had to call in, and because I tell you, you hit the nail right on the head. I do prison ministry, and I'm in the prisons every week. And the young fellas that I'm working with, it all seems like it always comes down to one denominator, and that's the fact that they don't have a dad or they don't have a parent. And I see it week after week after week. And I was talking to a friend of mine that went into prisons with me today. She does prisons ministry with me. And we were discussing this all the way home today. That's what we see every week. And then I turn the radio on tonight, and you're talking about just what we were talking about.
Now, David, just to be clear, so our audience gets a fuller understanding. So you minister to people in prison. And You're saying one of the key ingredients to why they're in prison, why they chose a life of crime, is because they didn't have a strong father figure in the home, correct?
Correct. You know, it's hard enough for these kids to deal with what they have to deal with today and stay out of trouble. But when they don't have a parent, especially a father figure, it's terrible. We just see it every week. We ask them and they say, I don't have a dad. I never had a dad. I never knew my dad. And over and over again, that's what we see every single week when we talk to these young kids.
David, look, I got to tell you, that was exactly my experience when Grace and I were, looking to adopt. Every one of those women, those girls, really, who were pregnant out of wedlock, they all said to me, I never had a father. I never had a father. I grew up in a single family home. It's almost like generation to generation. And then most of these women are drug addicts. I mean, I don't want to, you know, this. They glamorize women who, especially teenage girls who put up children for adoption. Many of them get involved, not just with sex. Many of them get involved with drugs. Ecstasy, crack, marijuana, cocaine, heroin, you name it, they're doing it. And so then they get shacked up with boyfriends, and then that never works out. And then they start getting into petty crime to feed their drug habit. Then they have a child to support. And then everything begins to unravel. It's one giant mess. And instead of recognizing that reality and saying, why are we declaring war on the family? Why are we declaring war on motherhood? Why are we declaring war on fatherhood? The liberals keep telling us we need more welfare. We need more sex education. They have to wear even more condoms or put on or swallow more birth control pills, or they need more job training programs, or they need more college tuition assistance. No, they don't. Most of the gangbangers on the streets, I'll bet you dollars to donuts, came from a fatherless home. That's the root of crime and poverty in America and drug use. Now, look, I don't want to overdo this adoption thing. But I even look at my boy, my beautiful boy. I was just telling this to the guys, the producers, when we were on break. He's now going to be 2. Already he's not afraid of his mother. Grace says all the time, she goes, Jeff, I'm happy you're here because I try to discipline him. And when I say no, it doesn't scare him. Now, when I say no, it scares him. When I say no, he just stops right away. So I'm just saying, I was mentioning this to Beowulf, the executive producer. I said, look at him. At 2, he's already growing not afraid of his mother. Imagine when he's 10 or 12 or 14 or 16, when he's 200 pounds, when he's like a middle linebacker. What's a mother going to do? Nothing. My friends, this is what we're rearing. So I'm asking myself, why are we celebrating this? There's nothing to celebrate. Let's restore the family. It has nurtured Western civilization for 2,000 years. And now, within 40 years, we're to destroy the seminal institution that built America, that built the West? No way. Dean in Hokum, Washington, I hope I pronounced that correctly, you're on the Savage Nation.
You know, I'm not an advocate of President Obama at all, but I hear a lot of, you know, it's President Obama's fault, and I think the guilt needs to spread out a lot wider than that. That you know, we're up here in Washington, and right now we just had our governor pass gay marriage, and you know, the states need to be held more accountable for what they're doing. That it's just not the president's fault.
Oh, no, you're right, Dean. No, look, Obama is a symptom of a corrupt, morally bankrupt, permissive liberal culture. That's what we have in this country right now. We have a counterculture that was in the 60s, has now become the main culture. And it dominates Hollywood. It dominates television. It dominates the popular culture. It dominates music, entertainment. It dominates government. It dominates schools, universities, every religion, even now, every sector, every aspect of American society. So now you have Washington State telling us, now think of this, that marriage is now between a man and a man, or a woman and a woman, when for all of known human history, it's between a man and a woman. Why? Because the purpose of the family, the purpose of marriage, is to have children. That's why you get married. Now, my wife and I couldn't have children, so you adopt. Not everybody can have children. But that's the primary purpose. That's how we survive as a species. Forget morality. Forget religion. This is about sheer survival. This is why, have you noticed? Christianity, Judaism, and everybody's big on this now, Islam. Buddhism, Confucianism, every major religion in the world, going back millennium, has taught that marriage is between a man and a woman. Why? Is it because they're all racist? Is it because they're all, quote, homophobic? No. It's rational, moral sanity. It's common sense. So this is what you now have. You now have states to placate the gay lobby, the homosexual lobby. They are going to redefine and essentially destroy the seminal building block of society. Families is what produces children. Families is what socializes children. It is like the factory of society. That's what it produces. You destroy that. You destroy the very basis of society. That's why we're producing all of these children that, for example, when they turn 18 or 19, are so degenerate, they don't pay for their own schools. They go get a sugar daddy off the internet and sleep to pay for their education. In other words, we're producing middle-class kids from supposedly respectable homes who now are prostituting their way through university. That's the new normal, my friends. We're living in a prostitution, pornographic society. That's what they've turned us into. Liberalism has turned us all into whores. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Sam in Indiana, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thanks. I was just calling to say that I was raised in a single family, my mom, and in a poor community. And I remember always hearing moms, you know, the kids saying, oh, my mom can do both. And now that I'm 37 with a wonderful husband and boys, I can see that my husband in 1 hour helped my sons become men more than I could do all day. So that statement, we've got to stop saying my mom can do both, or, you know, either way. It's no, we need both of these parents, because that's how these kids are learning. My husband comes home and he teaches my boys.
You nailed it. No, I mean, look, I can see it with my own boy. He needs me. I'm a role model for him. And in many ways, as a man, I'm going to teach him how to be a man. And this is something that is hard for a woman to do. It's the same thing with regards to girls. Girls need a mother to show them how to be girls, how to be eventually and grow into a woman. It's just common sense. Very quickly, Carol in New York, you're the last call of the night. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I was from a home with a one-parent home, really, but in essence, it was two parents. My mother, I lived with my mom. She worked. I went to school. She was here with me, and my father came and took me shopping and things like that. You know, there was two-parent home, really, but one was out of the home, okay? And what my mom always said to me was, when I got older, okay, because I have an older brother, too, and she always said to me, Carol, this what happened between me and your father is between me and your father, me and your dad, but you always respect. Don't ever forget to respect. And, you know, if you got in trouble, you know, you don't get in trouble. Because if you get in trouble, you're going to have to pay for it, being in trouble.
Well, no, look, Carol, and you nailed it. I don't understand what happened to American manhood. It used to be that men wanted to get married, that men wanted to have a family, that men wanted to work. Nobody wanted to be on food stamps. Nobody wanted to be on unemployment insurance. Nobody wanted to be on welfare. Nobody wanted to be living out of wedlock. It was called living in sin, shacking up. Nobody wanted to have the stigma of having a child out of wedlock, of having an illegitimate child. In fact, there were terms, the B words. I can't use them. But that's where those words originated from. There was a sense of public shame, of social ostracism. That's gone. What we have done in two generations is we have essentially destroyed the wisdom of our forefathers that that took them hundreds of years to build. We have destroyed all moral standards, all sense of public shame, all sense of traditional morality. It's all been thrown out the wayside. So what you're seeing is, to me, the complete implosion of American society right in front of our eyes. And for what? This is what I don't understand. These girls that I've met, these teenage girls with their out-of-wedlock children, they're miserable. They're not happy. My friends, the family is the basis of human happiness. You throw away the family, you throw away all away, everything that is good, virtuous, and beautiful away as well. The family will save America. We have to restore the family. Faith, family, and freedom. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.